When we get reports, Seth, of and these are old, either biblical or old legendary reports of beings that have visited us from different clusters up there, or we hear legends, for example, tribes people point to Sirius, for example, or Epsilon and areas like that in the heavens. Do you, because of legend, sometimes ever point up in those areas just for the heck of it?
Well, no, we don't. We don't.
Ah, come on.
I'm sorry. I know that's a disappointing answer, but...
You should.
Yeah, well, I get emails to that effect about once every 2 weeks. Somebody says, look, why aren't you looking at Zeta Reticuli, for example?
Yeah.
Right. Or why aren't you looking at this particular star, that particular star? Well, look, I have a certain sympathy for the idea, but, you know, I have to ask them, well, why do they think that that star is a particularly good one to look at? Because it comes down to, well, it comes down to dollars and cents in a way. The Arecibo telescope is a very valuable research.
Yeah, but wouldn't you rather look in an area that you've heard, albeit stories about visitations from those regions, as opposed to not knowing anything about the heavens in terms of where to point?
But we do know something about the heavens, you see. That's the thing. I mean, you know, for example, from astronomical measurements that, well, gosh darn it, this star over here is known to have planets.
Okay.
Okay, you might.
Those you have to listen to.
Those you have to listen to. But you're right. There are only about 110 of those.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that you can go through that list pretty quickly. But now you have all these other stars. Now, what do you know about the stars? Well, you know, astronomers have been studying stars for a long time, and it turns out they know something about some of them. In particular, they'll know, well, this star is a very big, bright star. Well, it doesn't really pay to look at that one, right? No matter what the stories about that star might be, because if it's a big, bright star, that means it isn't very old. It might only be a few million years old at
mm-hmm,
most,
mm-hmm.
Because when big, bright stars get a little bit older than that, they blow up. It's very dramatic, but if you're on a planet around that star, it's very traumatic, you don't want it to happen. So, you know, there's no point looking at those big stars because they're never going to cook up intelligent life. They don't live long enough to do that. You know, other stars, you know, might be little binary stars, and, well, they've got other problems. I mean, you know enough about the star to say, look, these are the stars that could, in principle, have planets that have, you know, had stable orbits for billions of years and might have a little liquid water and might have cooked up something interesting. So at least that's based on some real data. Now, somebody sends you an email and says, you know, I've heard these stories about these spacemen that have come from Zeta.
Right, and they've drawn a map, for example.
Right, exactly. You know, I say, well, I mean, is it worth a few thousand dollars worth of precious telescope time to look at that, or would we do better to look at stars that we know something about?
Okay, well, let me ask you this then. Once Alan goes online, would you be more apt to do things like that?
Well, we probably would do it. If it were...
For me? Would you do it for me, Seth?
Well, George, now you really backed me into a corner.
Would you do it in order to get back on coast to coast?
Well,
Seth?
I mean, that's an offer I really can't refuse. But I think that in the end, you don't have to worry about this too much because, indeed, once the Allen Telescope Array is really up and cooking, once it's really doing its thing, it'll be looking at thousands and thousands of star systems every couple of months. And all the stars that have names, all the ones that people send me emails about, will be on the list.
You're bound to hit them. And you know what? If you get a signal from one of those, you'll be the first to say, you know what?
George was right.
They were right.
Well, you know, in that case, George, I'm willing to chow down on my chapeau. I'll eat my hat if that happens. And
sure.
You'll have the satisfaction.
I just want you to send me a bottle of champagne. when you listen and hear something, and how would that sound be, by the way? What would it be?
What would it sound like?
Yeah.
Well, to be honest, we never convert the incoming signals into sound. You know, a lot of people have asked about that. They say, can I get a tape of what it sounds like when you're listening to
them? Yeah, we all think we're going to hear voices and
right,
stuff.
Right, exactly. Well, some of my friends do hear voices. But this is... We never do that, and it's a bit disappointing. Even to me, I have to say that we've never converted this stuff into sound. But what a signal would sound like, and by the way, we don't do that because we're monitoring millions of channels at once. And you know, you'd have to have a warehouse full of speakers to listen to all those sounds. So you know, we can't do that. But if you converted a real extraterrestrial signal into sound, what it would sound like is somebody playing a single note on a flute, standing in front of Niagara Falls. You know, there'd be this pure tone buried in there in the cosmic static.
That's right. What
we listen for.
Okay.
Yeah, and so you know, the voices might be in there too, but voices would be harder to find.
What might that signal represent? If you were to be, if you're not breaking it down into a sound, what is causing that kind of tone through the universe? Because I guess my question is if somebody's picking up this broadcast eventually, what will they hear? Will they hear you and I talking this way, or will they hear just a tone?
Well, they would hear. That depends on how strong the signal was by the time it got to them. Now, this radio show is going out into space, and FM radio shows, I have to tell you, go out into space a little bit more easily, but that's a technical problem. This show goes out into space. Now, if you're near enough or you have a big enough receiving antenna, then they could pick up this conversation and make of it what they want.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're very far away or you don't have an antenna that's the size of the moon or something like that, then what you would pick up is the part of the radio signal called the carrier. And, people who are listening to this show are actually receiving the carrier, but fortunately for them, their radio receivers are throwing it away.
Yes.
Right? That carrier would just sound like that continuous flute tone.
Mm-hmm.
That thing. Okay. But it turns out that that's broadcast, of course, by the radio stations because the receivers need it in order to tune in. Okay. But they throw it away. Nobody wants to listen to a continuous flute tone on
exactly.
top of our voices. But that's the part of the signal that's easiest to find at great distances. So that's what we're listening for. We're going to pick up the flute tone and all the message, the voices,
uh-huh.
the chat, whatever that's going to be buried down in the noise. That's going to require a much, much bigger antenna to find that.
And you worry about that later.
Yeah, if you find out that they've got their transmitter turned on, now you can probably find the money to build a really big telescope and go listen for the message.